It's time for action to tackle soaring food prices that have already led to outbreaks of violence in some developing countries where increasing numbers of people are going hungry. That's the message from the head of the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, which is hosting a three-day summit this week for world leaders and experts in food production, water, energy and the environment. The conference on world food security, the challenges of climate change and bioenergy opens on Tuesday with the aim of finding sustainable solutions to the current food crisis.
Chi si nutre del pane di Cristo non può restare indifferente dinanzi a chi, anche ai nostri giorni, è privo del pane quotidiano.
Speaking at his Angelus address on May the 25th, Pope Benedict reminded Christians that those who break the bread of Christ cannot remain indifferent to the plight of those who do not have enough daily bread for themselves and their families.
È un problema sempre più grave che la comunità internazionale fa grande fatica a risolvere.
Noting that the international community faces increasing difficulties in trying to resolve the problems of hunger, Pope Benedict said Christians must not only pray, but also work through practical initiatives to ensure that no one in our world lacks the basics for survival.
Perché nessuno manchi del necessario per vivere.
Around the world, there are some 850 million people still living in hunger. And if the food crisis continues, 4 million more join their ranks every year.
Archbishop Silvano Tomasi is the Holy See's permanent observer to the United Nations in Geneva. Over the past weeks, he's attended a special session on the right to food of the UN's Human Rights Council and a meeting in Ghana of the UN Conference on Trade and Development, largely dedicated to this same issue of the global food crisis. In light of such huge increases in the cost of basics like rice and wheat, I asked Archbishop Tomasi how hopeful he was that we can still achieve the Millennium Development Goals of halving hunger in our world.
The Millennium Development Goals have the advantage of defining concrete and specific objectives for the international community on behalf of the poorest countries and the poorest segments of population in the world. So from that point of view, I think the goals remain a target to be reached. But the process we live through of increased globalization has brought about uneven results. In general, wealth has increased in the world as a result of more trade, more liberalization in the access to markets, more communication among different regions of the world. But this increase of wealth has not been even. So there are some pockets of people, large segments sometimes of the population in a specific country, within a country, or countries left behind. There is an expression that is current, that the bottom billion of the world are still struggling to survive and to enter into the benefits that globalization brings about. So we see that a billion people are kind of emarginated and need to be brought into and to enjoy the benefits of world trade and the world progress and development. The goals, therefore, remain a valid point of reference. I think there might be other goals that could be added, especially at this moment when the food crisis is hitting several countries of the world, where the idea of providing adequate food and sufficient food for everyone could become another priority.
You've been talking extensively with world leaders, haven't you, including Secretary General of the UN Ban Ki-moon, about this crisis, these alarming increases in the cost of basic foods like rice and wheat. It's being called a silent tsunami, threatening the lives of millions more people, as well as this bottom billion that you're talking about. Do you share these alarming predictions, first of all?
Well, in Accra, during the 12th conference, ministerial conference of the UN Development and Trade Organization, over 3,000 people, leaders of the world, ministers, presidents of countries were present, and we debated for 8 days, really, what would constitute concrete steps to support and the development of all the countries of the world, especially the poorest and more forgotten. In this context, the food crisis took up a lot of prominence because of riots that have occurred in countries from Haiti or some African country like Egypt to some other problems in the Philippines or other Asian countries. So there has been a social and political consequence of the scarcity of food and the increase of prices for basic staples like rice and wheat. This political situation, which is like the tip of the iceberg that shows that there is unhappiness and there are necessities that are not met in the world, has provoked a new reflection on what the international community can do to ensure enough food, basic food supply for everybody. I think that the food, there is food enough in the world, but the distribution of food, the production of food need to be looked at again. In particular, there has been a call for a green revolution in Africa to make Africa self-sufficient in terms of food production. And this is possible because there is enough arable land, water, enough possibilities in the continent to provide food not only for Africa but even beyond. So the question is management of resources, distribution of resources, not hoarding for sake of exaggerated profits, rice or wheat, and then put it back in the market when the necessity is extreme. So we have to balance off a variety of issues in order to come out of this present crisis.
You're talking about these ethical issues of fairer distribution, fairer trade. You talk also about the importance of access to credit and job creation and so on, and the responsibility of foreign companies to assist local entrepreneurs to make trade fairer. And yet these ethical concerns are often the last thing on the minds of those who are seeking cheap labour and raw materials in the developing countries. How do you get this message across to the people who are making the decisions?
Our task is to keep insisting on this important fact that in the long run, an ethical approach to development ensures the success of development itself. So it's not that ethical rules jeopardize or limit the possibility of development. It's the other way around. And it's when there is a clarity of thinking and a sense of responsibility and solidarity with others, a sense of ethical perspective, then development really takes place in a factual and beneficial way. Now we are facing the problem that commodities in a continent like Africa, for example, become a source of income, and the point is to use this new income that comes into different countries of Africa to diversify the economy, to provide education for the people, because if you don't change the population by providing more education, better health, income as such, cash as such, is not going to provide good development. So So these are kind of some of the observations and the reminders that we are trying to put forward within the debates of the international community, so that there is a more comprehensive, a more global kind of approach to development.
When we talk of the bottom billion who are at the most severe risk of hunger and malnutrition, we often think of the slums, the shanty towns around the big cities. And yet you're particularly concerned about those in the rural world, aren't you? Those in the most remote corners of Africa, for example.
In the world, the majority of the population, you know, still is linked to agriculture to a large extent. In Africa, for example, yes, some 60 or even 70% of the population depends on agriculture because they are farmers or subsistence farmers. And therefore, we need to address the issue of the effectiveness of life in the rural areas, because that touches such a huge portion of the population of the world. And there are advantages by focusing attention on improving the quality of life in the rural world, because people will remain there. They will not move through a process of wild urbanization into the slums of cities where the quality of life is really bad and there are all kinds of problems emerging, from AIDS to malaria, or depends on the parts of the world we are talking about. So yes, the importance of looking again at agriculture is kind of obvious to me and to a lot of other people, so much so that even the World Bank has published a new study a few months ago highlighting the significance of agriculture and rural life in order to achieve an even development.
In your view, how much are these concerns about severe poverty still linked to gender? In other words, women and girls particularly being discriminated against, even when it comes to who gets a meal one day and who doesn't?
Well, around the world, there are some 850 million people still living in hunger. And if the food crisis continues, 4 million more join their ranks every year, according to the World Food Program. Within this enormous, unfortunate population, women and children usually tend to suffer more because of cultural factors that give less importance to women or neglect children or force children to do work without giving them a chance to grow, not only to have an education, but to have enough food to eat. In this sense, gender plays a role, but it's not directly, it seems to me, linked to the question of lack of food or lack of development, but it's more linked to some cultural factors that need to be changed through education and through an awareness, especially from a Christian perspective, that the dignity of women is equal to that of men, and therefore they are entitled to equal pay, to equal respect, to equality of treatment in private and public life.
And my thanks there to Archbishop Silvano Tomasi, the Holy See's permanent observer to the United Nations in Geneva.